Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Brian Lehr's Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Tuesday, July 13th. I'm Bridget Bergen from the WNYC and Gothamist Newsroom, filling in for Brian Lehr, to start an update on the ongoing situation in Haiti after the assassination of their president last week. Last Wednesday, Brian spoke to Gary Pierre-Pierre of the Haitian Times about the breaking news. It's been almost a week since then, and over 20 people have been arrested for the murder. We'll hear more about that. The Biden administration has also responded to a request for reinforcements and has sent a team of FBI and Homeland Security officials to Haiti, but refused to send requested military assistance for now. Haiti's troubled history goes deep, from colonialism to independence, then years of occupation and crushing debt, plus suffering more than two decades of brutal dictatorship in just the last 200 years. Then, after a powerful earthquake devastated the country in 2010, an influx of foreign aid and peacekeeping forces appeared to only worsen the country's woes and instability. Joining us now to look at Haiti's history and how it can inform what's happening now is Marlene Dout, professor of African Studies and African Studies at and African American Studies at the University of Virginia. She specializes in Caribbean, U.S. African American, and French colonial literary and historical studies. Also from Haiti is Catherine Porter, Toronto bureau chief for the New York Times and author of A Girl Named Lovely, about the experience in Haiti after the 2010 earthquake. Thank you for joining us, Professor Dout and Catherine. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you for having
us. Hi, nice to be here. Nice to be talking to you too, Marlene.
Nice to see you too, or see you virtually, rather.
Catherine, I'll start with you. For listeners who are catching up on this story, can you tell us about what happened last week, starting with the assassination early Wednesday morning?
Well, early Wednesday morning, around 1 a.m., neighbors of the president, who lives in a pretty plush suburb of Port-au-Prince, awoke to gunfire, and some of them awoke to the sounds of a loudspeaker, someone saying that it was the DEA and not to shoot and to stay in their homes. They heard explosions, and soon after, they learned that the president had been assassinated. There's not much known about, you know, what happened. Later on that morning, the Justice of the Peace came in and found the president in his bedroom, covered in blood, filled with at least 12 bullet holes. It looked like his place had been pillaged. They were looking for something, he said. And the hunt was quickly, you know, on for what seems to be, or at least what the government says, is a group of mostly Colombian former military men or some acting that were here. And we're not, you know, there's lots that we still don't know about this story. The government says that these are the culprits. They are the ones that have been found, and they were swiftly found, not just by police, but also by the population in small quartier populaire, like the small poorer areas of the city that cling to the mountainsides. People were basically finding these guys and bringing them out. And so we're at a point now that there still are some at large, but we don't really know what this was about and why these Colombians were here. Were they really the ones behind the attack? Why would these guys not have an exit plan? They seem to be just running down the street about a kilometer or a mile or so from the president's house. They did not make it far. There's just lots of questions we don't know the answers to.
Catherine, some of the reports allege that the president was tortured before being assassinated. What do we know about that? And what does that tell us about the motivation here?
Well, we don't know that to be truth. It's hard here. You have to realize that there's been very little information coming out from the police at this point during the investigation. They're hosting news conferences in which the chief of police speaks for only maybe 7 or 8 minutes. So the information is coming out very slowly. And so in the void, which Marlene will tell you, I'm sure, is something called the telejol, the rumor mill. And we don't know. There were photos of the president's body at the morgue circulated on WhatsApp a couple days ago all over, as well as X-rays purported to be of his body. We don't know for sure that the X-rays are real. We couldn't get confirmation from anyone in the government that they are real. They do show a broken bone, but it could be from a bullet wound. We have talked to forensic experts who say that he didn't show signs of torture, but we just don't know. We're at the beginning here. You know, the president certainly had enemies. He had enemies. He had made some enemies among some of the very wealthy, powerful people here. He, there had been said to be links with gangs. There's huge civil protest against him. You know, who knows who's behind this and why they would torture him if they did? But we really don't have that evidence yet. We have to wait.
And Catherine, just one other question about the what happened last week. The First Lady of Haiti was also injured in that attack. Has there been any update to her condition?
Yeah, the interim prime minister said the other day that she was stable. She's in a hospital in Miami. His government has said that that there was a Twitter voicemail put out on her account where she was saying that she was in hospital and saying that the assassination had happened because they wanted to silence the president's voice and his mission. No one's entirely sure if it was her, but the government said that was her. And so, you know, if that's the case, she's spoken out once. We understand she's going to speak out again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, according to the prime minister, the threat of her to her death is no longer a threat. She's stable.
Professor Dout, Haiti's history is interesting because of the first ruler of Haiti, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, a leader of the Haitian Revolution against French colonial rule, was also assassinated in the early 19th century. What are the ripple effects for a country when the person who led them to freedom is murdered?
Yes. So Haiti gained its independence from France on January 1st, 1804. Very quickly, Dessalines became at first governor general of the state of Haiti. He soon thereafter named himself and was nominated as emperor. So by the fall, he had been crowned emperor of Haiti, and they had set up an empire, even though it was, sort of the limits were the island itself. They did have designs to reunify the eastern side of the island that is now the Dominican Republic. And so actually that conflict between the western part of the island and the eastern part of the island existed in Dessalines' era and is one contributing factor to the reason for which he was assassinated. The interesting thing about the parallel with this situation is that so Dessalines was assassinated on October 17th, 1806. And we still don't really know who did it, who was there at Pont Rouge on that day, just outside of Port-au-Prince. But we don't know exactly who plotted and planned it. So two of Dessalines' rivals, one Alexandre Pétion and another Henri Christophe, who was actually the head of his army, were quickly accused. They accused one another. And this led to a huge fracturing and split of the island into then three parts. The eastern side were France and then Spain was occupying. And then Henri Christophe became ruler over the north and Alexandre Pétion set up a republic in the south. And that was in 1806, 1807. And that's when Haiti had a first black republic. So that's the first time there's a Republic of Haiti.
Mm. And then in the aftermath of that, years later in 1825, the French demanded that this newly independent country pay what I understand to be the equivalent of $21 billion to the French government and French slaveholders. How long did it take for Haiti to pay that bill? And what's the legacy of such debt for such a long time?
So that debt was agreed to, in quotation marks, by a later Haitian president, Jean-Pierre Boyer, who not only reunified the North and the South, but also the eastern side of the island. So at that time, Haiti was the entire island of Hispaniola, which is the name that Spain had given to the island in the 16th century. So Haiti did finish paying off the debt with the interest in 1947. The latest estimates by the French economist Thomas Piketty put the amount closer to 28 billion U.S. dollars. And there are some estimates that reach as high as 40 billion. And the reason for that is one part of it was the indemnity for the former slaveholders, quote unquote, to be compensated for the loss of their plantations and the labor and their proceeds from that. But the other part was that Haiti was forced to give France most favored nation status, which meant that they traded with Haiti at lower tariffs, and other nations that had been great partners of Haiti, like Great Britain, traded at higher tariffs. So Haiti ended up losing a lot of money. And this meant that that money wasn't poured into infrastructure and roads and schools, all projects of both Henri Christophe and Alexandre Pétion. Boyer levied very draconian taxes on the Haitian people. He told them that these taxes were for the price of their freedom. And that legacy continued on and on and on. And we can only wonder if that money had not been siphoned out of Haiti, whether or not we would be in this situation today.
And then flashing forward even more so, the U.S. occupied Haiti from 1915 until 1934. Professor, why was that? And how did the occupation affect the country at that point?
So this is, again, another parallel, because President Sam, who was president of the country in 1915, only for a few months, actually, he was wildly unpopular. He was accused of many crimes. The Haitian people sought his resignation, and he fled to a foreign embassy, to the French embassy, and he was dragged out of the embassy and he was murdered. And so some people call it an assassination. There's a little bit of quibbling about whether or not he was actually still president of Haiti at the time of his death. And this assassination became the pretext for the United States to occupy the country for 19 years, an occupation that lasted from 1915 to 1934. That was couched as kind of being for Haiti's own good, since there was sort of mayhem, according to the U.S. government. But what happened during the occupation was what has happened during subsequent occupations. There's been protests against it. There were deaths during the opposition of Charlemagne Perrault in 1919, not only his death, but that of 3,000 other Haitians who opposed the occupation. And so we see that even though there is this history of unrest and presidential assassinations or deaths while in office, that the response of the international community to those issues has not necessarily made things better. The occupation is seen as the watershed event in Haitian history, because once again, Haitians largely interpreted that as bringing colonialism back, the colonialism that they'd fought and died for in previous generations.
I want to bring one of our callers into this conversation. Jay in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Welcome to WNYC, Jay.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
And tell us, what's your reaction to what's been happening, and what's your perspective on this story?
So, you know, Haiti's been kind of a mess for a really long time. I'm a Haitian American. And I just wonder why Haiti hasn't done better. I feel like when our Western powers want a nation to succeed, it usually does. I think of places like Japan, you know, that was destroyed and yet they were able to rebuild, and they're one of the most prosperous countries in the world. And I think about, you know, a lot of the European countries that were destroyed during war, and all of them, well, not all of them, but a lot of them have rebuilt, and they're very prosperous countries now. And I wonder if there's something else, you know, with Haiti that a lot of these Western countries just don't want us to succeed. I know you spoke about, you know, the debt that was placed on the country by France. Excuse me, I'm getting nervous. But
great.
You could just maybe talk about that and tell me what you guys think about that, because I'd love to hear your thoughts. Thank you.
Jay, thanks so much. Professor Dowd, what is your response?
I mean, I think the caller essentially, you know, kind of answered his own question, that it is very true that what it seems like is that the rest of the West, because Haiti is actually an integral part of the West, not just geographically, but geopolitically, and hasn't seemed to want Haiti to succeed. So President Boyer, you know, he agreed to this indemnity, again, in quotation marks, because he thought that not only would France then recognize Haitian independence, but that the U.S. and Great Britain, Haiti's trading partners, would as well. And that's not what happened. In fact, Great Britain didn't recognize Haitian independence until 1838, after slavery was fully abolished in the British Caribbean colonies. And the United States waited until after the Civil War had started in 1862 to recognize Haitian independence. So very quickly, we see that, you know, that the world was not on Haiti's side, because they were the first ones to abolish slavery, and England and the United States wanted to keep slavery, as did the Netherlands and Spain and Portugal. And so, of course, they were not on Haiti's side, and they continue to this day to largely exhibit evidence that they are not in Haiti's corner.
Catherine, what's your response to the caller?
It is really telling, you know, that not only did, I mean, Haiti was a real threat to the world. This is a free black republic at the height of slavery, and also not just a free black republic. It had been the richest colony in the world. It produced more than half of the world's sugar that was at least exported, and coffee at the time. It was considered basically a gold rush. So it was a huge blow for France, but it was also a real symbol of that was very terrifying to Western powers. I mean, what is interesting to me today is that you mentioned Japan. I mean, Japan's a member of the G7. We don't think of them the same way. But, you know, Haiti, the influence of foreign actors today in Haiti is huge. You will see that, you know, when the president does his press conference, the prime minister does his press conference, and this is one of, you know, the interim prime minister, Claude Joseph, he signals really, really early on. He'll say at the very beginning, you know, I got off the phone with our friends, the Americans, and they sent their sympathy. And, you know, I got off the phone with our friends, the Canadians. And he's signaling that the international community is behind him, because the international community, which, you know, in Haiti, it's known as a core group of ambassadors. They are incredibly powerful on who gets to stay in power. You have to remember, like, you know, when the end of Duvalier, he was whisked off in a plane to France. Then he had, you know, Aristide was taken twice. The second time he said he was kidnapped. Préval, who's a much more recent president, and who was, you know, a real exception in that he died in the country peacefully, he also said that after the earthquake, the powers to be came to him one night and said, you know, you need to leave the country. We need to get you out. And he refused. So there is a real Bigfoot influence of international players here. And, you know, your question, the big question that I always ask is why? Why is that today?
I know, Catherine Porter, we are going to lose you soon. You need to go and continue reporting on the ground. But before you go, can you tell us, we know you are in Port-au-Prince now, where your reporting is headed. What will you be following up on today and going forward?
I can't necessarily scoop myself on
without scooping
on
yourself,
national
of course.
Right. Well, look, you know, obviously there's many things here. There's big questions, you know, who are these guys that came? Where were they staying? What were they supposed to be doing here? You know, so we'll be following that story, trying to track that down. The power struggle that's going on, we haven't mentioned, but there's, you know, when the president was shot a couple of days before, was assassinated, he had announced a new interim prime minister. I think it was his sixth. And that guy was supposed to, as a neurosurgeon, he was supposed to take power that week. So there's a real power struggle between him and the guy that was there before, who was Claude Joseph, who was a foreign minister at the time, and the head of the Senate. I mean, there is no parliament here. There are 10 sitting senators left in the legislature. There's no lower body. There's only 10 out of 30. So 8 of those 10 have come together, and they believe that head of the Senate, the president of the Senate, he's the one who should be in charge. So that's, there's a power struggle happening right now, and that's also why you hear each of those people talking about the support of the United States. They're all jockeying for who will support them. We're going to have to follow that story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting what the caller just said about what, you know, this bourgeoisie. This is something you hear in Haiti all the time. But it does pose a bigger question, which is, who is going to benefit from this? Who had the most to gain, or at least who had the least to lose if this president mm-hmm. was gone? And that's another question that I'm asking myself, and I hope that my reporting can help contribute, find the answers.
Well, Catherine, we will certainly be following your reporting, and thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have to leave it there for now, but my guests have been Catherine Porter, Toronto Bureau Chief for the New York Times and author of A Girl Named Lovely, and Marlena Doubt, Professor of African American and African Studies at the University of Virginia. She specializes in Caribbean, U.S. African American, and French colonial literary and historical studies. Thank you so much for being here, Professor Doubt. Just really, really helpful and fascinating context for what we will continue to follow is happening on the ground in Haiti.
Thank you so much for having me and for doing this report.
Brian Lehrer, A Daily Politics Podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.